All right. It now gives me great pleasure to introduce David, our speaker tonight from Orchid.
Hey, everybody. I'm David. I'm an alcoholic. I almost got emotional right there. That's pretty rough. I'm going to set my timer. This message about leading. My sobriety date is March 6, 2021, but that's my solid AA sobriety date. I am in my early 50s. I've been sober a lot through my life, and I quit drinking a lot through my life. So throughout this share, I'm going to share my experience with my drinking, which is probably not too different from what you guys have experienced, because I definitely left a wake in my life with my drinking. And then my strength as far as what I've gotten since March 6th, primarily, what got me here, and then the recovery that I have, the hope, So I'm 53 years old. I started drinking like all of us. I was born and raised here in Oregon. Really didn't talk to her about this. But I was born and raised here, grew up in a family. I'm one of five kids. I have a twin brother. We're not identical, we're fraternal, so if you guys see me out and about and I don't say hi to you, it's probably my twin brother, it's not me being a jerk. And that happens, I swear it happens, because he's vocal too. He doesn't have a beard right now, so I'm trying to distinguish a little bit, but he's not in recovery. He and I had our first drinking experience together. We were probably 12, 13, and my older sister's boyfriend wanted to spend time with her, so he got a bottle of Boone's Farm and gave it to my twin brother and I and said, "Here you guys go. Go have some fun." And I threw it out in the garage and proceeded to drink the whole thing. It's huge, and we didn't know where we're at. And that was the start of really my history of drinking. Went like that a lot. Just drank this blackout abuse. So, and that was at 13. Didn't really know what drinking was then. Kind of didn't continue really at that point. Then when I got into high school is really when I started drinking. It was like the party thing. And high school was, work hard. It's kind of like how I lived my life. You work hard during the week, get all your assignments done, do whatever sports you're going to do, and then on the weekend it's like, where's the party? And I stayed away from drugs in high school, which was a shock. I didn't like smoking pot because I got too paranoid with it. My first couple of experiences with that was really not good, so I kind of wish in my whole life that that would have been my experience with alcohol, but it wasn't. So, because when I drank alcohol, I loved it when I could actually remember some stuff. It made me even more social than I am. Took away all my fears, just like everybody, right? Took away all my fears, made me feel super happy because you're not thinking of all the stuff that is stressful, I guess. Even in high school, it's not a whole, it's not a whole lot of stresses in high school other than how, where you're going to tend to be and how you're going to get it. But that's how I learned to drink, was in high school. In excess, usually, binging. I went on to college. College was high school on steroids. I mean, literally, because I had no parents around, right? Didn't have to go home and try to kiss your mom goodnight without bringing beer on her or something like that, or taking a bunch of mints and stuff before you walk in, because they'd go to bed, which is cool, but they knew. I mean, gosh, I have four kids of my own right now, and they're just probably just glad that we're home safe when we're in high school. But college, left to college, and still not 21, but managed to have fake IDs, and we're talking about that now. Now you can order them from China, and they come perfect, right? Back then, you would pull the little plastic back, and you'd scrape off the little thing, and get a pencil, and then try to lay it back down, right? Be nervous as heck going in, like McLovin, on it. But you'd get it done, right? You'd end up getting the beer and pre-party, and then you'd go out. And in college, I was away from my parents, got into drugs a little bit, I have to say, because alcohol had me lose my inhibitions. And I tried them. I didn't smoke pot. I liked cocaine, sucker enough. And it was a lot of fun because you could party a lot longer on cocaine and beer and smoking than you could if you just drank and smoked. So it was like a big positive for me. I was able to have a lot more fun, like for days, and then grip your pillow and try to go to sleep. You know, and talking to people like this, and it's funny, you get through that. I mean, I was doing that and managing a life, which meant I went to school. So if I didn't go to school, I'd get yanked from college or have to get a job. So I learned in college kind of like my lifestyle. I learned that I can set goals, get them done to the bare minimum, but also get all my party in. And it just set a process, and I took that out of college. I got a job, and I came back to Santa Maria, got a job, and was dating my my wife at the time, and got a little responsible, which was shocking, right? Because I came back and lived with my parents, and then got engaged, and realized I had to start a career, got in the car business locally, saved for a house. But I found my girlfriend at the time, was my fiance. We ended up getting married, kind of fast-forwarding, and she was almost like the exact opposite of me. It's almost like I was looking for someone to kind of help save me, because I was going down the wrong path. I mean, even when I come home with this from college, I would be, you know, I think my parents would tell too, I was just hitting it too hard. And so finding this person, I mean, I loved her, it was great. She was really caring and attentive, and we got along great, and I felt good because I pulled back from all my drinking and all my partying, and I started feeling good, and then I got responsibilities. We bought a house, right? And then you have a career, she had a career, but then we started having barbecues because you're young, and your family come over, and my family, I'm one of five, she was one of eight. So, and she was right in the middle, I'm like just to the end. Everybody had kids, so every baptism, every first birthday, every graduation from kindergarten, it was like, who's bringing the beer and how much beer are we bringing based on my in-laws and my brother-in-law? And we all parted, we all drank. So it's just that they were kind of normal. They would drink and be like, okay, we got to go and get the kids to bed. And I'm like, what? Where are you going? We're just starting. You know, it's 10:30 and it's a Thursday night and I'm getting hammered, you know, I'm trying to get people to stay, have more fun. So I didn't know it then that I had the signs of an alcoholic. I definitely didn't conceive to myself that, you know, it was my primary thing to stop drinking. I just thought that was life because that's what I knew. I continued with that through four kids. We had four kids, stayed in the car business, managed, you know, I heard this the other day in the chair. I wasn't an alcoholic. I had a job, a house, I had car payments. I took care of kids. You know, I did my little girl's hair in the morning, in the school. You know, I got really good at scrunchies and doing braids and stuff. I mean, because my wife works in the morning. So I did lunches. I was responsible, but I was not responsible when I drank. And I still, it was, I look back at it now, it was so stressful. Because even like a family function, like when we had a barbecue at our house, right? We get the house all clean and stress levels through the roof, right? And I'm sneaking in the garage and pounding two beers and hiding the cans because the stress levels through, because even family coming over, it's that expectation of, are they going to have a good time? Is our house clean enough? I'm like, I felt crushed stuff I didn't care about, but I got sucked into my wife and how hesitation was everything, right? It's so stressful. So I'm not blaming her, but it fed into me having to ease that stress of life. And then we proceed to, you know, she look at me half like, you're hammered. What did you drink? But she's only doing this one glass, but I keep taking out to the garage. And I continue to drink and then pass out. And there's many times where I lost clothing with family members around. So it wasn't good. So my life became unmanageable. And through that time, like I was saying, my sobriety date is March 6, 2021, but I stopped drinking because we have marriage problems. Shocker, right? Me drinking, she's super conservative, she kind of saved me. And we had situations with our marriage counseling. Guess what came up in our marriage counseling? Is drinking, right? So I would have to talk about drinking and I would stop, or I'd only drink on weekends. So that list that we went over last night, I'll only drink beer. I'm only going to drink two, three drinks, right? And then, but I'm pre-partying and sneaking stuff. I'm only going to drink wine. I'm not going to drink any hard alcohol. I'm going to stop drinking at 10 o'clock. I mean, it was everything to try to control it. That's a lot of stress. That's a lot of effort for drinking. And it was just exhausting now that I look back at it. Because I didn't trust myself. Because I don't want to let my wife down or have my kids crying at the end of the night because my wife's yelling at me and, you know, or me not remember that night calling people like, hey, man, was that cool? It's good to see you guys. But you're like, oh, man, I can't believe you were speaking through the backyard, whatever, you know, whatever. And I'm kind of, I would temper that, right? And that was exhausting. Even going to, you know, family members' houses and not remember how I got home, I'd call and be like, hey, I just want to say thanks for having us. And wait to see if they're going to say something like, what you do or whatever else. It's just, it was a whole lot of, whole lot of stress, I guess. So that's how I drank for 20 years. I raised kids, put them, you know, through schools and stuff like that. Still working on that, actually. But my life was stressful. A lot of my stress came from alcohol and managing my life. My life was alcohol. Like, I did things to see when I could drink. I played golf to see when I could drink. I went to my brother-in-law's, you know, son's baptism so I could drink. I went to wine tasting to drink. God, sit there, tell me how many times. I'm like, I'll be the DD, and never, out the window, right? I'm in the car the last 2 liners. No, I'm in asleep in the car, passed out, right? So just stuff that I did was just a lot of work and a lot of stress. And again, throughout that time, I stopped. And I stopped childishly, like really thinking, I stopped not for me, I stopped because my relationship was failing. So I stopped for, I'm Catholic, so we stopped for Lent, right? We stopped for Easter for 4 months. And I'd be like, you know, at the end of 4 months, I'm like, why aren't I getting treated any differently? You're still treating me like I'm drinking, you know? And I'd be like, so as soon as Lent ended, and then I got to the point where, and some Catholics, like I am part-time, you could have them give up on Sunday. So I get hammered on Sunday, right? And I'd be going over until like Wednesday, and then I'd be like, oh, whew, yeah, man, I'm not drinking, I'm not doing that again. And then Sunday come along, and I get hammered on Sunday because it's the only time I could drink. And then I'm wondering why she's treating me the same way. I'm like, what's going on? You know, I'm stopped drinking for 7 days or 6 days. But I did that a lot, and I did it for other reasons too. And I was a people pleaser. I'm trying to manage my drinking, and I couldn't. Is what it came down to. And so fast forward to where I get into a job, which is really working with clients, and it's entertaining. And entertaining means going to dinners and lunches, and all my clients drink. So I got to where I was drinking every day from mid-afternoon till the evening and jumping behind the wheel. And I did it for a lot of years. And I finally thought it was the end of my life. I got a 502, wrecked my car, got a DUI, got arrested on March 5th of 2021, and I couldn't believe it. I should have had thousands of DUIs, I mean thousands. I've even wrecked my car before and just made it home, you know, just got lucky. Don't remember coming home. Come home and I wake up in the morning, look outside, like, where's my car? And have to really kind of think about where's my car, call people like, hey man, where did we end up last night? You know, so I can find out where to go get my car. And that's not good. Or you go, I don't know if you guys have done this, you wake up, you go outside and look around your car like, is there anything, I mean, I don't remember driving home, is there any dents or side swipe anything or something like that? And, yeah, and that's a whole other story. I have gone to college. Do you think this, I'll tell this real quick. College story. I went to my first year of college in Sacramento State, and there was a good 80s hair band, really heavy metal bar in Sacramento. So I'd go there and party, and I had this old Dodge truck, and I'd drive home. I lived 20 minutes outside of town, and I fell asleep on I-5 or passed out real quick, right? And I-5 is pretty straight, and I kept on going. The road turned, and I kept on going. And I went down the embankment through a barbed wire fence. I woke up like, what? Opened up my door, got out, I went through the barber grabbed me and had random jeans on, and they ripped my jeans, I was like, damn it, and my truck is sold, right? I get in my truck, frontage road, and I see this light, and you're, I don't know if you guys have been blackout drunk, you kind of see these lights, you rationalize stuff, I see these lights to this gas station, I go over to it, pull up at the pump like I own the place. There's 50 yards of barbed wire behind me. My truck is totaled. I walk in, I'm like, where's Woodland? Because that's where I live. Like, hey, dude, you're 5 miles beyond Woodland. I had gone 5 miles, passed out on my wheel, like the truck. And you know the guy behind me was like, there's a silver truck in front of me. You know, I was around the freeway because it turned and I didn't. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, and there's a guy, this is my guardian angel. I mean, really spiritual event, and I still didn't see it. The guy goes, I'm going to Woodland, I'll go with you. And we walked out of the gas station, we look at my truck, and it's under the lights in the island, and it's like probably 2 o'clock in the morning. He goes, holy crap, what happened? I'm like, I don't know, I flew up the road. He goes, do you think a guy like that would not get in the car with me? So we go to get on our side, and the door handle's gone, says the bob wire. We have to go around to the passenger side, he gets in with me. And has popcorn, and he goes, I go to get on the freeway, because that's the way I'm thinking. He goes, no, there's a frontage road that runs 7 miles to Woodland. Let's drive the frontage road. I drive the frontage road, eat popcorn with him. My headlights were gone. The barbed wire is glowing because it's underneath the truck, and we can see lines. And he's looking out one window, I'm looking out the other, driving back to my apartment. Park my apartment. Like, oh, I actually got into Woodland. Okay, let me out here, because if you got in the town, he, you know, gets pulled over with a bunch of barbed wire behind me. Got back to my apartment, parked my truck, came out the next morning, well, I'd say morning, probably about 1 o'clock by the time I came out, super hungover, and people couldn't even get by my apartment because they were driving around the barbed wire, like, still 50 yards of barbed wire. And I say that because you come out and look at your truck, and I'm like, holy crap, and there was nothing that was screwed on that truck, was still on it, because the barbed wire, I must have gone through like at 80 miles an hour, and it could have literally broken the glass and probably took my head off, right? This is a truck. You know, we'll stop the truck. God's looking out for me. I'm here for a reason. Didn't come out with a scratch. Even his jeans, it tore them. Didn't touch my skin. Just tore my jeans. Didn't have a scratch on me. And that guy got me back to my apartment that night. Didn't get a DUI. Didn't anything. Cut the barbed wire. Threw it over the fence. But on that barbed wire, it was like a street sweeper. I picked up everything. I mean, there were panties, there were shoes. I'm like, did I run somebody over? I mean, it was, but you don't even remember that stuff. It was crazy trash. I mean, it was just 50 yards of barbed wire going down the road. So that's got off on a tangent. But that's how my life became unmanageable. And, but there's a reason, right? I mean, I look at that, and that was didn't stop me from drinking. It's crazy. Like, it's that story, and I don't know, the Bill story where he gets hit by the truck, he's going out of traffic. I did that for 25 years with my kids and my wife being witnesses. Yeah. Not good. But where I am now, that DUI that I got finally saved my life because I ran off the road, wrecked my car. My car called the cops, which kind of sucked, but because I could have been off there enough, but it called emergency services. But I needed it. I mean, literally, when I saw the CHP pulling up, I was like, I can't get out of this one. I mean, this is, get a sense of like, this is it. This is really happening. I mean, I made it to 52 years old and had all these close calls, and this is going to happen. And it did. I got arrested, cuffed, put in the front seat, you know, was well over the legal limit. Because I don't remember driving. I don't remember flying off the road. Typical, right? I did it when I was in college. Lived through it. This one I lived through too, and I didn't hurt anybody. Didn't damage anything. And knock on wood, it changed my life. Because I hired an attorney and he said, you know what? You should go to AA. Here's the court card. Email me one. Go to as many meetings as possible. I didn't know anything about AA other than my buddy got a DUI when he was 16. And we went to a meeting down by the library here in town, and they just come with me, and I'm like, oh, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I went, and it was typically what it was. It just cut smoke. I couldn't even see the top of the ceiling, and I'm like, well, and there's donuts, and I didn't drink coffee, and everyone's smoking while they're talking. I'm like, dude, I'm not, you know, and I didn't remember what they said or anything. It was typical, so when he said, yeah, you're going to have to go to AA, I'm like, oh, man, crap, and then, you know, yeah, you need to go as many as possible before your court date. And my first meeting was the factory meeting, and I was scared to death. Pulled up, I'm nervous, was there a little early, and I'm walking in, and I see Teddy, and our show story, and I mean, literally I'm nervous. I didn't even know it was the right place, dark parking lot, and everything, and he's like, hey, man, you here for the meeting? I'm like, yeah. He's like, puts his arm around me, goes, this is where the magic happens, baby. Literally, it was like, wow. And we walk in the side door, and I see three people. I know, I'm like, hey, come here. And then I proceed to, I don't know if I shared that night, but I, the first time I share, I'm just bawling, right? I'm just, I'm super emotional because my life's over. I got a DUI, just recently divorced. I was actually almost just finishing my divorce, which just justified my whole aspect of my relationship, right? 5 years of counseling, now you're drinking your problem, and I pulled on my car and get a DUI. So my former spouse was just like, I told you so. I mean, and rightfully so, right? I mean, but again, it was a blessing. It was a God shot that I didn't even think was a God shot at the time. It got me into these rooms. That first pastor meeting was awesome. Just a great, great group of guys. I mean, blew me away. Being here, this fellowship, even the 600 Club, with a lot of these churches, the factory, the Presbyterian Church, the stag meetings, the 3 o'clock meetings, it's kept me here, right? I missed my court date, got that all done, but I'm at a point now where, you know, they said get a sponsor, had a temporary sponsor for a while, didn't know what the steps were, didn't know what was going on or what it meant. I heard them read, you know, and you're still kind of, when you're new, you're still kind of numb. You're like, whatever, someone told me to read something, and you're not really paying attention. But when you get a sponsor and you start working the steps, when you have someone that says, okay, go through the big book and go, let's go over this, and you read it together with them, and you relate. You relate to Bill's story. He realized the first step is that we admitted we're powerful with alcohol. I had never done that before in my life. And then I realized that, you know, step two, I can't believe I was a power grader myself. Well, I was religious my whole life. I was Catholic, right? 4 kids. We're a perfect Catholic family. I mean, we stopped having kids on and we got a TV in the master bedroom. Then we were set. We had 4 kids. And we go to Mass every Sunday, right? And so when we go to Mass, we would go in, and we have 4 kids, and everyone comes in, and you're lying on the pews, right? Hard pews, listening to church, and you're more, when you have no kids, you don't get anything out of Mass. You're more concerned about what the kids are doing and what they're doing, each other separating them. And the process was, I was supposed to be religious. I didn't feel religious. I didn't feel faithful. I mean, I had to go to confession, which was nice, but that's kind of like a 4th step and a 5th step, and you feel really good afterwards. And with Catholics, it's nice because you can keep sinning and go right back to confession and life is slate clean again. That's one thing I like about Catholicism. But with church, it was just a process, something we did. It was like work, you know, and it was work to get the kids there. And it was just, you know, there was times, I can't say all the times, there was times where it felt good. But being in this program, and actually, I made it to a power grade myself, which is God. It's God for me. I'm closer to Him now after being in this fellowship and going to these meetings and hearing about people with spiritual situations, spiritual events that happen to them, than I've ever been. I'm praying more than I ever have. I'm not going to church every Sunday or Mass every Sunday, but I'm closer to my higher power right now in my life than I've been in 25 years of marriage and being a Catholic my whole life. Because I continue doing what I was raised as, right? My family's Catholic. We have 5 kids who grew up in Orchard. We went to the same church I was going to every Sunday. And it was like punishment as a kid. So we pass that on to our kids. You know what's funny is that, and it's funny because in this situation, you want your kids to be spiritual and close to God, but having that situation or that experience every Sunday was something that maybe didn't do, and maybe it does. And I kind of went off on a tangent, but overall, this program has got me very spiritual and very close to my higher power. And that has given me strength to continue moving forward with the steps because they're hard. I mean, it's work to work this program. You have to humble yourself, for sure. You have to set aside your pride, which is hard, because I'm a pretty prideful guy. You have to set aside your ego. You have to look at your character defects, man. I have some character defects. I've got some character defects, and I know my character defects have affected the people that I love around me. So when you think about that and what this program does and how you makes you live your life or helps you live your life as a blueprint, it's amazing. I'm excited to live the rest of my life and show an example to the people I love. It's like a full living minute. I hope I can do it. I'm going to try. It's progress, right? I pray that my kids can see the difference in me. I pray that my family, my mom, my dad, God bless his soul, can see the difference in me. And I feel proud of it. You know, to do the steps truly, to ask God to lead in your shortcomings, to want to do my ninth step right now, which is amazing. I've done two amends. I have three daughters. I have two older kids, my son and my youngest daughter. And my two older kids were in the thick of my drinking. Gosh, man. If I could go back. They just felt it. Right? I was drinking at people, was angry, covering up stuff, wasn't present. Even if it's great vacations, I mean, I was fortunate. Really fortunate. I had no excuses. Again, like I said, I kept my job, kept my house, planned things. Actually, as I said earlier, my former spouse was a school teacher. She planned everything, and I just would show up. And she just did a great job, and we'd have great experiences. But mine were all, I wasn't present. I was drinking. Vacations, I'd work hard. So I deserved a drink at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'd look at it, you have a problem? I'm on vacation, right? And it was just not healthy. And still, my older kids were there for that. I feel like they felt it the most. My younger kids, my two younger ones, I've changed, right? They did go through our separation and stuff, which was difficult. And, you know, that affected too. And it makes me wonder that if I had found AA or, you know, this program and the fellowship, earlier on, would I still be married, right? There's always that question, and I don't know. Maybe I would have got divorced sooner, because I would have been, you know, sober and healthy, but God's got a plan. As Luke always says, I'm right where I need to be, and again, where I need to be is in these rooms and work at my steps, and I did an amends with my 20-year-old daughter, and it was cool with breakfast, and she's a sweetheart. She's always super bubbly and always positive and everything, and I sat down next to her. We went to a freeway. Happy, yeah, that's the counter. And we sat at the counter, and we were talking, excuse me, we were talking about things, and I said, you know, I'm in recovery and I'm working through AA in the program, and she said, oh yeah. And I'm stopped drinking, it's been over a year, and I just want to let you know that. You know, I just kind of went through my whole mental with her, and she goes, she listed all the things that I did as a father. She didn't say, I'm glad you did that, but she said, no, Dad, you used to take to school every morning. You take each one of us 1 week to breakfast early and talk to us, and she listed all these great things, and I'm like, wow. I mean, that is her personality, but it also made me feel really good because I focused, it was one of my church defects, the self-condemnation. I focused on all the negative. Like, I wasn't there, all I did was work. I was selfish, right? I cared about what I had and what I had to go do, and justified it. And she didn't see it that way, and it made me feel good, but I also know and told her that, listen, I'm going to do better. What can I do to make it right? She goes, nothing. Just, you know, you're doing great. I'm proud of you. And so, to have my 20-year-old be that open and understanding was great. And then I did it in the midst of my 15-year-old. She's like, I don't remember you drinking. I'm like, come on. You had to. I mean, she's 15. This sober day was a year and a half ago. You had to. She goes, no, I really don't. I'm like, you're probably blocking things out. So as it comes, just let me know. Because I really, I want to tell you, I'm going to I'm doing better. My purpose is to not drink the rest of my life and be a better person and work this program and help other people. And she says, yeah, I mean, she goes, everything's fine. And so I think my kids have let me off easy. So some instincts been pretty easy, to be honest with you. But I still have my former spouse, which is going to be, I think, also good. And that'll be healing. And I have my oldest daughter, which her and I didn't mix well because she's a lot like my former spouse. And I think it'll be good. It'll be, I'm assuming she lives in Southern California, so when she comes up, I'll try to spend some time with her. And I'm going to work the whole process and continue to work the 10th step, 11th step, and 12th steps in my program. And overall, I don't know where I would be if I didn't wreck my car and get a DUI. I mean, it was a gut shot. I mean, it's the different things that get us here. That got me here. Thank God I've stayed. What keeps me here is fear. We talked about that in the past and shares is that now that I'm sober for over a year, the fear of drinking again is keeping me sober for sure. But I also, you guys, hearing your stories, your shares, and what you talk about keeps me sober as well. Because if I hear something and I'm like, oh man, I forgot about that. There was something that someone was saying about stealing beer. I'm like, ooh, God, there's an amends I should probably do too. Because when you're younger, we would steal beer from where we were. But it's just, it's a situation where I'm super thankful and grateful to have this program, to have a good sponsor, to be around other alcoholics that we all really suffer from this stuff. I mean, normally that I can't understand, but to acknowledge it and know that through these steps there's a blueprint. And someone made an analogy of this, and this is like life and the fear, right? Going out into a battlefield as a minefield. And you have engineers that go out, which is like everybody that's been in Alcoholics Anonymous before us, and people that have time that you learn from. Everybody that has done that has gone out in these landmines of this battlefield, marked all these landmines, right? And you see them all, and you're like, okay, well, avoid all that stuff, and there's a pathway, we'll be safe. And that's the way I feel AA is, because it's not me going out there and marking landmines. It's like seeing the people before me have gone and taught me how to do this with these steps. It's amazing. I mean, it makes me a better person in life. So I'm just going to stay on the path, even though there's that fear where my alcoholic brain goes, ah, this is a shortcut, you know, and you're going to get your leg blown off. But your thought process is that way. If I just stay on this program and go through the battlefield with this marked, safe passage through it, I think I'll be good. But I'll end it there. Thank you guys for your time. Hopefully you got something out of that. And that's really kind of what I was trying to share, is that hopefully that, you know, experience, strength, and hope, everyone finds something that they can relate to and help them with their program. So thanks for letting me share.
All right, let's give David another round of applause.